You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? That ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
I think what you're trying to ask is, why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I said this before in the same interview. I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Akua. Welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. We are the return of intelligent radio as we ensure the free flow of opinions and push the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. Good morning, Akua. Thank you, Queen, for getting in the saddle with me this morning. Glad to have you black on the show, as I like to say. If you will, say hello to all the intellectual outcasts out there. Give people a little bit of your background. Then we're going to introduce our special guest on the show this morning. But glad to have you with me, Queen.
Peace. I'm glad to be here again. My name is Akua Agusi Elebuoban, and I'm a mother first, and then I'm a children's book author, book publisher, have a long history of activism and passion to develop our people. That's me.
Well, you are in the right place to do that. Just to highlight mental dialogue, we already simplified down to if we can improve the conversation inside your own mind, then that'll help you be better, which helps the community be better. So obviously, you as one of our Queens of Intellect members, you help do that every time you come on the show. But without further ado, let's introduce Brother Freddie Taylor from Urban Intellectuals. Thank you, King, for being with us this morning. If you will, say hello to the intellectual outcast. You and Akua spoke right before the break. So if you will, King, tell them about yourself before we get into this morning's discussion question.
First of all, I appreciate y'all having me on the show this morning, and I'm honored to be here for Black History Month, Black History Year, I should say, right? All year, every year we celebrate the history of our people. But my name is Freddie Taylor. I'm the CEO and founder of Urban Intellectuals. We specialize in Black history made easy. We like to say that we make it fun and easy to learn Black history, and we do that with a series of our historical education products. We have 18 in our inventory. Most people are familiar with our Black History flashcards, which has sold all over the world and doing phenomenally well, engaging the community. We also have a Black History Club for children, where we teach live Black History classes to children via the Zoom platform called the Sankofa Club. And then finally, to bring it on home when people want to go experience the history and culture up close and personal, we have our Black History Travel Experiences that we call the UI Travel Movement, where we expose the history up close and personal.
I love it. Doing big things. You've been literally in these Black history streets for longer than most. I've been supporting Urban Intellectual. I was letting you know that before the break, for a lot of years now, and have pretty much all the sets, if you will, even the coloring books. Sometimes we even give them away at our event. So glad to have you on for this morning's discussion question. If you are a first-time listener, again, I go by the name Black Socrates. We take the Socratic method, if you will, to any of the topics that we choose to talk about on race, sex, and culture. And this morning, we're obviously kicking off Black history. So this morning's discussion question is, Black history, who are our unsung heroes? And so we wanted to dig a little deeper. We obviously got two experts in this area. So hopefully today y'all will hear some people maybe you're not familiar with. And we're also going to challenge you as the listeners and the audience, share your local heroes and put their name out on the air. This is a not only a national show, but an international show. We've had callers call in from Canada, from Ghana. And so that's for the live show. But, you know, as I always talk about, two-thirds of listeners are going to listen via Spotify, Apple Podcast. So get them on the show this morning and let people hear about your local heroes as well as we discuss the unsung heroes of Black history. Typically, I always start the show, Makua, you know, by asking what was your first thoughts. But I'm actually going to start with a short piece from my new book, Reeducation of the Negro, I dropped last year, Necessary Conversations on Race, Sex, and Culture. And if you will, I'll share this very briefly. I think you'll see exactly how it applies to this morning's show, and I'll get both your thoughts just on this piece as an intro for this morning's discussion. And of course, you being the queen, we'll start with you, and we'll get Freddie's thoughts thereafter. So real short piece that opens up the book. This is actually the piece that started mental dialogue, actually. I call it the birth of the Mental Dialogue Community Club. And so I wrote this back in 2008. If you've come to distrust America, at least hope the game is fair. Why would you ever play if you believe the game is not fair? You won't, and if you're not playing, you can't win. African Americans come from a long, proud history of winning. However, unknown to us, we disgrace our past by not taking ownership of a country we helped build. Don't ask what would America be without black people and turn around and not be proud of that fact. A sense of pride must re-enter the black psyche to commit to excellence. Our ancestors understood this and overcame all unlevel playing fields. Anything less reduces us to a scourge of underachievement and hopelessness. Now we mistakenly wear our underdog status as a badge of honor and sometimes ridicule genuine attempts at improvement. Immigrants, including Africans, come to our country and revel at the opportunity before them, and yet many of us African Americans are mentally blocked from this view. The disconnect from our history leaves our fragile psyche blinded from the giants we once were and still are today. Your first reactions to that piece, Queen? Akua? Fred, Akua may have dropped just now. Fred, I'm going to go ahead and jump you in, and hopefully she'll get back in. Her phone just dropped.
Live radio. You got to love it, right?
Absolutely. It's part of the game. We love it. We do it. Hey, we rock it out and make it work. Technical difficulty is part of the show. You feel me?
Yeah. It's a good life lesson because stuff happens, right? Like, you got to be able to roll with the punches. But I definitely can see how it's the beginning of the show and kick everything off because, it's just the truth, right? I love everything that you said, but I really love poking and prodding at our unseen greatness, right? Like, we're trying to remind the folks of who we have been on this planet so that we know who we can be moving forward. And watching, you talk about watching all the other cultures coming over and taking advantage of the American dream, if you will. And he alluded to, like, where are we in this activity? So I love how it set up everything for today to remind ourselves who we have been so that we can make sure that we're being that in not only the present but the future.
No, absolutely. And if you will, brother, I'm going to actually have you call back in. I think we get the last part, we got a little bad connection there. So if you will, just call back in. Okay. I got a cool back on, so I'll let her kind of rock out to you. We get you back in here. We're going to be going to commercial. So when you come back on, we may be at commercial. But if you will, just call right back in and see if we can get a better connection.
Okay, got it, brother.
All right, thanks a lot, brother. Hey, Akua, I think you caught most of the piece before you dropped. So if you will, Queen, just give me your thoughts before we go into the break, and we'll get Brother Freddie back on as well. But just your thoughts to whatever you were able to catch out of that piece before your phone line dropped.
Honestly, I was having phone trouble before it dropped. I was trying to fix it. So I wasn't able to catch much outside of what he just said, which I can somewhat grasp, but
Don't stress it. Don't stress it, Queen. Yeah, if you didn't catch it, if you're having trouble catching it, so that's all good. We'll go.
Right.
No problem. We're gonna go to break and come back and get hot and heavy into this morning's topic. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. Calling all married couples. Have you planned your Valentine's Day weekend getaway?
If not, we recommend you reignite your passion in your marriage at the Oneness Experience Weekend, February the 16th through 18th, 2024. Brought to you by Enduring Love Ministries, hosts Roosevelt and Renita Quick, authors of The Power of Agreement and 30 Years of Marriage Experience, ask couples to reconnect, rekindle, and recommit to their marriages. Are you yearning for a deeper, more purposeful connection in your marriage? If so, the Oneness Experience is for you and your spouse. Taking place in the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, experience an anointed weekend with plenty of couples activities, marriage enrichment sessions, such as the strength of seduction, and ample quality time together. Again, the Oneness Experience Weekend takes place February the 16th through 18th. For registration details, please visit Enduring Love Ministries International at elmintl.org. Again, that is elmintl.org. Tickets are going fast.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
In the United States of America, we wouldn't have virtually any music if it weren't for the black people. Virtually, I think, all of our music, whether it's country, western, bluegrass, the blues, rock and roll, you name it, it all started and came from black America. So when you listen to the music of your choice, remember, chances are you wouldn't hear that music if it weren't for black people long ago.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, Black History, who are our unsung heroes? My special guest co-host is Akua. My brother Freddie Taylor from Urban Intellectuals is also on the line as we hear a cut from none other than John Henry Clark, if you will. Most of you should know that name. The last cut you heard was from Jesse Ventura years ago talking about the role of black people in American music. And I mentioned, in a sense, prior to the break, immigrants coming to the country and seeing the opportunity before them in a country, as we highlighted, that we helped to build in so many words and within the history, if you will. But something that I also learned when I was in the military for a few years, I was in the Air Force for 6 years, but outside of the U.S., most of the world pretty much considers American music our music. And I'm just kind of starting there just in the sense that how many people even understand that we obviously are familiar with hip-hop and R&B and things of that nature. But for the most part, we started techno just to even add that to the genres as well. And that's just a highlight that I found that the rest of the world knew. And I'm like, hey, I'm in America and didn't even realize this. And, you know, and so just wanted to kind of throw that out as a kind of entertainment area that we love to focus on, how many of us even understand that. So if you will, Freddie, again, just kind of wanting to highlight and get into our unsung heroes, and John Henry Clark to a degree is even one, I would say, for the mainstream. Anybody that's in a sense considers himself conscious, they understand John Henry Clark, but they don't understand that he literally went to battle with the top minds around the world when it came to our history. So if you will, King, just kind of jump in wherever you fit in on kind of where we're starting at, if you will. Brother Freddie, you're live on the air. Akua, can you hear me?
I did what you
okay, yeah, you're on mute. You got to step on mute. No problem, brother.
Yeah, the mute was going great, and then I forgot to keep talking.
No problem. You're good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was saying I was real excited to hear the good brother John Henry Clark. I always call him my distant mentor because I definitely studied under Dr. Clark, watching his videos, reading his books, taking in his information. And I'm often surprised at how many people don't know this brother. And I think his origin story kind of really
it's really all of our stories, right? Like he talked about being a child and having a teacher tell him that he didn't have no history and that he came from a people of no history because he was, you know, obviously in his history class here in America and asking, but what about the black people? And he's like, you know, I'm sorry, Johnny, you know, you come from a people that have no history. And he said in his young mind, he just couldn't accept that. He just couldn't believe that he came from a people with no history. And he said that began his quest to not only find those individuals, but to prove the establishment wrong. So I love and honor that brother, and I just wish more people were aware of him. But you have my heart smiling, brother, when you kicked it off with Dr. Clark. In fact, people who start this journey and start to wonder where they should begin learning their learning, I always start with Dr. Clark, A Great and Mighty Walk, this documentary. I believe it's about 90-some minutes, and it's available on YouTube, but I believe that it's a great introduction to what you're not being told. So anybody that's listening that's not familiar, please look that good brother up. A Great and Mighty Walk is a tremendous place to begin your re-education.
No, absolutely. It's only right that we start with John Henry Clark when it comes to kicking off a Black History Month for all the reasons that you spoke about. Akua, any thoughts? Again, just we're generalizing. After this, I'm going to actually introduce people to some of the trivia from Urban Intellectual. I'm going to throw both of you guys a trivia question. I want y'all to answer right away because I'm going to let callers try to jump in on it as well. But any thoughts, again, just opening up with that, brother, knowing your background as well. I'm pretty sure you're familiar with Dr. Henry Clark.
Absolutely. One of my first books in a study group was Africans at the Crossroads, African World Revolution, and it was like an introduction to Pan-Africanism and a wonderful introduction because, of course, if you know any of his works, his literature, like he goes into details, he is dropping actual historical facts and dates and everything that would make you possibly question the information you're getting, he's going to provide you with so you can just absorb it compared to another author that may just kind of express how they feel about something, right? Deal with a little more emotionalism. He's going to introduce you to just like a variety of concepts that will get you on the right path. As Freddie mentioned, like it's a great author to start with if you're just starting this journey. Even if you're not, I mean, you still got to clear his catalog. That's mandatory just to have the right political mind way of being able to assess even other works, in my opinion. Just definitely one of my favorites. I hate that I didn't get to meet him before he became an ancestor.
No, I can agree with that. I'm actually glad Freddie just hit me to the documentary. I'll probably be trying to catch that this weekend and really, really proper way to really be introduced to our unsung heroes of Black history. But with that said, again, if you're not familiar with Urban Intellectuals, urbanintellectuals.com, we're going to be highlighting them throughout the show. But I'm going to hit you, both of you, with this trivia question. Don't answer yet. We're going to wait to the end of this segment to try to answer it, but I'll make it pretty simple for you. And these are, again, just these amazing trivia questions you can get from Urban Intellectuals. But the first one is, who was the first prime minister of the Congo, I'm sorry, and the answers are Patrice Lumumba, Stephen Biko, Augustine Matata Ponyo, or Thomas Sankara. So either one of you can answer that at the end of the session. If anybody calls in and answers correctly, I will be sending you something after the show. So again, who was the first prime minister of the Congo? A, Patrice Lumumba, B, Stephen Biko, C, Augustine Matata Ponyo, I hope I'm saying those names correctly, and D, Thomas Sankara. All right. Well, again, if you will, I'll just kind of put both of you on the spot. Let's go back to you, Akua. Any unsung hero that unfortunately, like I said, we all wish more people knew who John Henry Clark was, but I'll just kind of put you on the spot. Do you have a particular unsung hero in history that more people should know? I definitely have a couple of my favorites, but I just want to put you on the spot, Queen, and see if you could throw one out there that people may not know as well.
Absolutely. And this is the person I mention almost every interview if the opportunity presents itself. Dr. Amos Wilson, that's my absolute favorite. And especially for anyone who is dealing with child development on any level and teaching our babies, they absolutely have to expose themselves to his works. I don't know anyone who has done more extensive work with the developmental psychology of our children and our people at that. So absolutely, Dr. Amos Wilson.
Yeah, definitely one of my favorites. And just to highlight, if you haven't heard of, hopefully most people, I would say most of my listeners probably at least have heard, but everybody's not necessarily familiar with his work to a degree, if you will, especially in the age, you know, in the social media age, probably seen videos and things of that nature. But to your point, Akua, literally understanding how to teach in this environment, that's what makes it more different, right? You can just kind of get the information and hope passed along and it serve our children, but to really understand the psychological effect of how to teach within this environment, that's something that he best understood. Freddie, I'll throw it over to you as well. Any unsung hero that you would kind of like to throw out that maybe people should know more about? Again, just generalizing for the callers out there, y'all can jump in and tell us who your unsung heroes are as well. But anybody you would like to throw out, if you will, Freddie.
I got to double down real quick on Amos Wilson, because what a selection. His blueprint for Black Power was earth-shaking for me, and he wrote, I had to get up and find it, African-Centered Consciousness versus the New World Order, Garveyism in the Age of Globalism. Is an absolute phenomenal read, but just talking about just reshaping your brain, right? We do this conversation, urban intellectuals, about centered around these frames, these glasses that they put on us as a people. They get us to see the world from a particular viewpoint, a European viewpoint, and Amos Wilson does a phenomenal job of breaking that. I'm sorry, y'all just bringing up my heroes, right? Like, I get fired up over them, but the individual that I'll stop. I won't do it every time. I try not to anyway, but I would have I get fired up over this, man. I love these conversations, but I would bring up Maggie Wiener Walker. I think most people aren't familiar with the good sister who is the first woman in the United States to start a bank, to charter a bank. This is a Black woman, but this is the first woman, period. Not the first Black woman to charter a bank, but the first woman, period, in the United States to do it. She was born to a Confederate soldier and an enslaved person there in South Carolina. And her story is absolutely amazing. What she was able to accomplish, and her viewpoint of economics in the community. In 1905 is when she formed the bank, but at that time period, she's talking about the importance of economic empowerment, working, circulating the dollar, turning our pennies into dollars. She used that understanding and that insight and her network to start a general store there in the community. She also formed a newspaper, which I find very interesting because many of our revolutionaries control the media outlets, right? So they have to have a way to create the narrative or form the narrative or, you know, fight back and push back against the negative narrative that's being written about us. And she used that for activism purposes, forming boycotts, screaming for unity in the community, and economic empowerment so that we can continue to purchase our dream of freedom here in this capitalistic society. So Maggie Lena Walker is definitely someone that I love to highlight in these conversations.
Nah, dope. Yeah, I learned about her through your cards, actually. Cool, were you about to say something? I'm sorry, Queen. Go ahead.
Oh, no. After you're done, I wanted to mention one more.
Let me throw out mine as well. Okay, yeah, absolutely. But I'm glad he brought her to the table. And I love Freddie to the point. You know, Dr. Claude Anderson talks about those five pillars to building a community, and he considers that the fourth floor, if you will, being the media leg. Like, you know, what good is a revolution if you can't talk to your people? And so, like you said, to your point, it was always imperative that those that were considered revolutionary within our community, they always added that media leg. And so that's a role that we take very serious, if you will, on this show, making sure that we are trying to equip our people with information that they can kind of see their dreams with and take that role very seriously. If I could throw out one of my favorites is Fannie Lou Hamer. I found her story some years later, if you will. And in my book, Reeducation of the Negro, highlighted on one line that for me, when I learned her story, her and Ella Baker, if you will, with NAACP, I felt like they was just as crucial to the quote-unquote civil rights movement as Martin Luther King was, if you will, at least from the way I've learned their stories. And so I'll just kind of throw out the name, and I think she's become more known as of recent. Again, the social media age allows people to kind of just quickly look up people. So if you're not familiar with Fannie Lou Hamer, I would highly recommend people, in a sense, learn her story. It is absolutely amazing, the dedication that she had for our people, and with her background, being able to sit before Congress and demand equal protection of the law was the number one concern during the civil rights movement. And a lot of people, I would say, because of how we learn about the civil rights movement, that period, we don't really contextualize that that was the number one goal. It wasn't to be next to white people. It was to ensure that whatever we build, we could keep, because prior to equal protection of the law, they could easily, and they did it plenty of times. Black Wall Street comes to mind, but it's not the only one that was destroyed or burned down. And so it wasn't a goal to get next to white people. It wasn't a goal to just go to school with white people. The main thing was, if we build something, can we keep it? And that was not possible without equal protection of the law. And so I just like to highlight her as one of the activists that people should know. Go ahead, Akua. You said you had another one you wanted to bring to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I agree with that as well. And then the other scholar that I wanted to mention is Dr. Jawanza Kunjufu, and he has the Countering the Conspiracy to Destroy Black Boy volumes, as well as Kill Them Before They Grow. I love every last book. In fact, I started reading the Countering the Conspiracy to Destroy Black Boys before I even start having any children. And it helped me to, one, I'm going to say be accountable for the way that I speak and raise this future son I would have. Because he just plainly laid some things out that women were responsible for that I imagine are probably even a little harder to swallow after you've started your journey in motherhood. But yeah, just in the way that we basically can form them to prepare them to fill in the system, you know, lower your voice and just make yourself small, basically without realizing we're doing that. We think we're protecting them and we're saving our family from being embarrassed because they're loud and rambunctious. But in reality, what we're doing to their confidence and teaching them how to fit in opposed to how to stand out or work with their energy is crucial to, like, the development of our entire community. It's not just to them as a person, but how they fit in and then what we're able to do. Because if they can't manifest their destiny or their purpose, that's one thing that our community doesn't have. You understand what I'm saying? Like, that's something, a destiny unfulfilled that could have propelled us in our acts and activism and, again, developing things in our community. So I highly recommend his works, and I don't feel like enough people mention him or know about him. I would love to mention him.
No, that's what we're here for today, so that they are mentioned. Again, 2/3 of people are going to listen to this on their own time. They won't be listening live, so absolutely glad that you're mentioning. And to your point, and there's a history, too, where that, you know, be quiet, try to be safe comes from, and we talked about that on some of the shows where we've got into mental health, about the history of, in a sense, how, if you will, the education system doesn't really fit our rambunctious, you know, all males, if you will, but particularly our African-American boys. And so to your point, you know, even how we, to this day, I would say, look at how, in a sense, white kids are able to act with their parents or whatever. We kind of look down upon it, not realizing that plays a role in the authority of you being able to assess yourself in the world later in life and say, hey, I get what I want. And we don't really understand that perspective because we come from a history of, as you said, having to minimize ourselves for safety, and it still plays out deeply mm-hmm. into our psychology, unfortunately. So another great unsung hero to bring to the table. We're about to go to break, so I'll put you on the spot, Queen, again, and I'll just do one at a time. Who was the first prime minister of the Congo? A, Patrice Lumumba; B, Stephen Biko; C, Augustine Matata Ponyo; or D, Thomas Sankara. Who would you go with?
That's not fair to the callers. But am I going to get? I'll get a prize too.
No, you don't, no, you don't get nothing. Only if somebody calls in. Oh, you don't get nothing. You. You try to get the prize, and I'm going to shoot over. These his cards, and he's probably going to get an A on all of them.
Of course he will.
So I'm putting you on the spot. You don't get. I gave you the names. I made it easy for you. I could have left the names out.
You didn't have to, but you made it way, way too easy. So, yeah, A.
Patrice Lumumba, absolutely.
Patrice Lumumba, absolutely.
All right, but this next one is actually going to be a contemporary cut to highlight an unsung hero that should be known when it comes to the NBA. If you're a longtime NBA fan, you've heard of this brother. But this is someone that all NBA players should look, hang their hat on as an unsung hero. I'll let y'all pick it up as this cut plays. For anybody listening online, the number is 646-787-1691. You have to press 1 to get in on the show. I'll be doing some trivia after this cut as well.
And then they got an injunction again for another 10 games I had to sit out. Then the next 10 games, I got an injunction to play again. We get to Cincinnati, and they said, guess what, ladies and gentlemen, we got an injunction tonight. And they said, this injunction reads, he must be outside of the grounds in which this arena sat on. So they put me out into the snow.
Oh, wow.
So I stayed out in the snow and almost froze. Then I got on the bus and left and had another 10 games. Then I got another 10 games. Next time we were in Chicago, Chet Walker is warming up on the other end, and the owners of the Chicago Bulls said, act as if you got hurt. So Chet said, oh, my God, my ankle is hurt. And so the next morning I get up, and they sued me for $600,000.
Why?
Because he said he tripped on his ankle while I was warming up on the other end.
So they're playing all these games with you.
All kinds of games. So the case maneuvered its way all the way to the Supreme Court. And when it got to the Supreme Court, Thurgood Marshall was on the court. He was one of the justices on the court, and he kept saying, you know, it's ironic this case is not affecting tennis players, hockey players, baseball players, and it kept going on with different sports. And he said, man, now, ironically, it's only the two revenue sports in college that this rule is affecting. And so he said, you know, we're sending our soldiers to Vietnam at age 18. They're coming back maimed and hurt and sick and dying. But yet you got a player whose mother is picking cotton in Silver City, Mississippi for $2 a day. My mother was at that time. But yet he make all of this money for the Olympics. He made all of this money for the university. He made all of this money for the ABA. And yet he can't make a living in the NBA. And so that's when the justice got together and they said they came back 7-2 in favor of me.
Oh, wow.
And that's when the case was over, March 1st, 1971. And then the next round was, let's go play, because the union didn't support me. So everybody was, I was out alone by myself doing this whole process. And so then we started playing, and we got to Milwaukee and Kareem, where normally every team would go downstairs and stay downstairs and make me sweat upstairs by myself, and people throw bottles and stuff. These are real bottles back in those days, you know, not that plastic stuff. So I would like to stand there, yeah, I'm the man, you know, and Kareem wouldn't go down. So we stood in the middle of the floor just kicking it, you know. And so everybody came up from the buck, and then we started playing.
Wow.
And that's when everybody said, damn, this guy is ready to play, and let's get ready for the young guys coming in, because they are going to come. And then the NBA says, you know what? This is a great thing for us, because now we have a chance to expand and grow. Because before, they had 4 years of waiting outside. You know, after high school, you had to wait 4 years before you could come into the NBA.
That was to help college grow. It was growing the college game. College players never ever thought about having their own rights. Never ever thought about having anything. Didn't even know how to start negotiating or even start that conversation. We weren't equipped for that.
Right.
But yet, they owned your rights for 4 years, and they made money on you for 4 years. And how dare you ask for anything?
And
you're getting
an
education.
You're not even asked for a hamburger.
Meanwhile, numbers don't lie.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with co-host Akua. This morning's discussion question, Black history, who are our unsung heroes? Our special guest is Freddie Taylor from Urban Intellectuals. The cut you just heard was actually Spencer Haywood talking to KG, Kevin Garnett. I thought it was a dope cut. There's a lot of fat in that cut. Just to put, I would say, recent history, if you will. I consider I'm 50 years old, so anything that's around, as old as me is considered recent history. And so I wanted to just kind of elevate and jump the conversation ahead because there are a lot of heroes that we should know about. And I would consider Spencer Haywood absolutely one because what you heard was him fighting to go into the NBA prior to having to be in college for 4 years. And so he was able to win that case. And that's how the Kevin Garnetts and the Kobe Bryants that we all know, and Tracy McGrady's, those that made the jump strictly out of high school, but really even before that, just being able to go early to even leave a junior year or a sophomore year. He's the catalyst to that. And now the NBA is at a minimum salary of $1 million. And so I would hope that any NBA player plays old to Spencer Haywood because he fought that fight for them. And here's some of what I want to highlight. And Freddie, I want to kind of get your thoughts on this as well, because I'm pretty sure you're familiar with Spencer Haywood. But he talked about getting bottles thrown at him and getting put out in the snow. Because in 2024, ain't nobody sitting out in the snow just to do anything. Again, our ancestors got it to that point where the minimum is $1 million in that sport. But somebody actually went through that for them to get there. And here's what I want to really highlight and let you jump in, brother, is we're not talking about him as the first black player in the actual NBA. It's just him deciding to go against the establishment and the type of treatment he received that had to go all the way to the Supreme Court so that he could make money to help his mother, who was making $2 a day as a farm worker back in Mississippi. So it just highlights we need to understand current history as well and what ancestors have, in a sense, he's still living. I shouldn't even call him an ancestor, but what people have done even in current times for us to enjoy even the opportunities we have now. Your thoughts, King?
Yeah, that was phenomenal to hear. I know who Spencer Haywood is, but I had no idea about that part of the story or that backstory there. But thank you for sharing that. That was amazing. Now I'm being nosy, looking into his background, and but it was like, wow. But I think it's a good reminder because today's society got us in this, they're trying to put this colorblind society, and, we're beyond that now. If you talk to the younger generation, I hear that from them all too often, right? So it means that the manipulation machine is working here in the West. They've got people buying into that, knowing that just a couple of years ago, somebody was, Spencer Haywood was going through this, but a lot of atrocities like this are continuing to happen. They're happening in 2024, let alone the struggles, I believe that's when that was happening. But there are a lot of people, a lot of ancestors that literally walked through hell for us to have all of the opportunities that we have today. And I think it would be a crying shame if we go to sleep and thinking that it's just your talent, just your ability that got you into these spaces, and you don't recognize all of the people that are putting the rungs in the ladder that you're climbing up, putting those rungs in with lashes on their back, with humiliation, with intimidation, with racism, frankly. So I think it's important to highlight these stories. But I was not aware that Spencer Haywood's journey was that troublesome. But it's good to highlight those stories. I'm glad that brother's still alive to hopefully get some of his flowers for what he's laid in place today.
No, absolutely. And and just another thing I want to highlight, Nakua, any thoughts you may have as well. But it's so dope to hear him reference, the first black Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall openly pointing out, hey, this doesn't make sense. This is only happening where there are African-Americans in the two revenue sports, and it's always been that way, right? The tennis players can go pro as soon as they like and all this type of thing. And so, again, just highlighting somebody paved the way for them to even go early if need be. And he was basically a hardship case. Mother's making $2 a day. And to put that in perspective, I did a little research because I'm a big researcher or whatever. I want to put things in real context for people just to understand. So in 1970, the minimum wage was $1.45. 1971, it jumps up to $1.60. To put that in context, again, that's the minimum wage. But for farm workers, they could be paid less. So his mother was picking cotton just 53 years ago for $2 a day for an entire day. Minimum wage at the time was $1.45. A year later, it jumps to $1.60. Just to give people perspective and context, $1.60 in 1970 in today's dollars with inflation included, not just the equivalent of what $1.60 is in 2023. I just looked this up. But when you actually consider inflation was so high in the 70s, would actually equal $12.50 an hour today, just to kind of put that in context. But his mother was only getting $2 a day, and they were just fighting him from being in the NBA, just to going against the establishment. They already got the black players. This is before, you know, like I say, Kareem standing there with him. But again, it just shows you that our people are willing to go through with a lot of stuff at stake just for their own livelihood. Again, I know I'm kind of digging deep into that story, but I just wanted to bring a current story to the table, if you will. Akua, anything that stood out in that cut that you want to talk about? And I'm going to hit you out with another trivia question before we go to the next break.
Not much. Sports is definitely not my forte, but something I enjoy is anytime I hear an athlete reference someone who inspires them, it's not another athlete, because I think when youth only hear it stay in that bubble, it makes them want to disconnect to political and social issues. They feel like they got to just keep their head down, focus on sports, and not be connected to their community. So I like to hear that part.
No, absolutely. Fair enough. So here's your next question. Anybody out there listening, you can jump in at 646-787-1691. Matter of fact, I think I may wait to the top of the hour to reveal the answer for this one. Who was the first black American to serve as a member of the board of directors of a Fortune 500 corporation? Who is the first black American to serve as a member of the board of directors of a Fortune 500 corporation? Is it A, Kenneth Chenault, B, Ursula Burns, C, Vernon Jordan, D, Arnold Donald? All right, so if anybody wants to call in and jump on that, you do have to press 1 to let us know you want to speak. But also real quick before we go to the next break, I love, you know, in a sense, putting things into context. Like, who would have thought when I hear his story, it blew my mind when he goes, my mother was picking cotton for $2 a day. And I'm like, okay, I was born in 1973. This is 1970. And so even as I was preparing for this show, Freddie, I had no idea that I would be even have the thought. There were people picking cotton for $2 a day just 50 years ago?
Wow. Wow. That is mind-blowing. It's hard to wrap my head around that. Like, wow, just 50 years ago. Hmm. Yeah,
and
too much change, right?
Yeah, it's like quite often throughout my lifetime as I was younger, we would always say, hey, the civil rights was just, you know, 50 years ago. And now we're, you know, now we're 20 years later when I was younger, right? So now it's, you know, the civil rights period is 70, 80 years ago, if you will. But no one's putting into context what I just said. And, you know, and I highlighted Fannie Lou Hamer because, again, this is something. And on the quick, if you will, give me a quick thought on this. We've got about a minute before we go to break. But I don't think people even understand, you know, in a sense, the 70s is right after that civil rights period or whatever, and that's a reality for some of our ancestors, if you will. But I don't think people really still, when we look at history or learn our history, we don't understand that equal protection was the main thing. Do you have any thought on that? Just a quick thought before we go to break, because I think that even gets missed. Even sometimes when we teach our history ourselves, we miss that main point of why that was what the fight really was for.
Yes, did you want to jump in?
We all got about 30 seconds. So, Fred, I was just asking you, did you have a quick thought before we go to break?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. Yeah, but I think that's still the fight, right? Like, we're still looking for equal protection.
So I definitely think it's important to highlight that that was like the crux of the matter then. But I mean, the fight isn't over. I like to talk about the context and the history, but we're still in this battle today. We're not being seen the same. We're not being educated the same. We're not being medically treated the same. Like, we just have so many inequalities across this country. The fight continues.
I respect that. I will say, yeah, the fight continues, but we ain't working for $2 a day now, thanks to what ISS already did. So I like to give them a lot more credit. I like to give them a lot more credit than saying the fight's the same, but I will say that. But let me go to this break. We'll be right back. Well, all I ask is that you think.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not, tchmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with tchmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today. tchmedia.ai is here to change the game.
Auntie Drewella Jones was like, look, I'm tired of being enslaved, so I'm going to burn down your house. Auntie Drewella Jones tried to burn down her enslaver's home during the Civil War, a man named Thomas Farrell. Not only that, but also during the Civil War, she attempted to go around and burn down every overseer's home she could find. Her philosophy was to never be loyal to a slave master. I be trying to tell y'all, our people were not backing down. They fought back in a variety of ways. Because her story wasn't documented well, I can't say for sure if she was successful in her endeavors, but I'll say the very fact that she tried was a success to me, and it's very inspiring. Auntie was a G, and her actions are a reminder that what we have inside of us is greater than any adversity we face.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I am your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. Special guest co-host Akua. Wanted to highlight that cut comes from a brother by the name of Ernest Krim III. If you're on IG, just follow him on Mr. Krim III. So I think I'm saying that correctly, but he's highlighting an ancestor who was in the Civil War period willing to burn down her master's home. I wanted to point this out because another thing that I think absolutely goes missed within our history is in 2024, I think there's a lot of people within our culture who actually think we were okay with the enslaved, that some of our ancestors were okay and quote unquote did not fight back. That's why they were quote unquote able to be enslaved. I think the comment from Kanye comes to mind. I forgot what he said about slavery was a choice. Yeah, slavery was a choice or whatever. So that pops in my mind right now. And again, it's a huge disservice because these are the stories you're not going to hear about. Nor do I expect you to hear about them in the public school system. However, it is imperative that we are telling our own story. And so that's why I appreciate people like Ernest Krim, if you will. Appreciate this brother, Freddie Taylor. Appreciate Akua writing these stories so that our children can learn stories. They need to understand what our ancestors actually went through. Fred, I saw you got dropped off for a second, but I hope you caught most of that cut. But again, I'm just really wanting to highlight, and maybe you can bring some more stories to the table. But to a degree, people don't really understand how often our people rebel throughout the quote-unquote 246-year history of the enslavement period. Any thoughts on that, King?
Yeah, one, I love what Brother Krim is doing, his movement and his work, so shout out to him, and definitely shout out to you for highlighting your good brother and what he's doing. Yeah, no, absolutely not was our people okay with what was happening with them, and it was constant revolt, and that's being written out of the narrative, right? Being written out of the story, and I think it's
done intentionally to make the next generation more and more docile. And it seems to be working, right? The people are buying this garbage. But we know that our people was consistently fighting back, and not just here in the United States, but around the Western Hemisphere, throughout the Western slave trade, as it is unfortunately termed. In fact, we have a new project that's coming out later this year. We call it 18 Uprisings. So we're highlighting 18 uprisings throughout the Western Hemisphere for this very point, right? Because it's like when the warriors are gone out of our community, we're going to miss them, right? We're going to definitely regret that. So we can't allow this narrative to persist. And I definitely want to keep continuously push back on that. But one that is known, but I never really, we don't really go deeper into it, is the Haitian Revolution, which is one of the revolutions that I love to discuss because it brings in so much more of the discussion. Like, you know, why is Haiti still poor today? The exploitation that's going on there, the role of the DR, the Dominican Republic, in all of this. And I just see black folks flooding to the DR to spend their money, and I'm just like, damn, Haiti's right there. It's the same, literally the same island.
Right.
If you say you like the views, the beaches, and the waters, why not go there and spend your dollars instead of the DR, where, you know, many of these people are enslaved to this day if they have the opportunity. And Haiti played such a vital role in the freeing of us here because their win over Napoleon and the French, they're destroying them. And honestly, they were fighting the Spanish, the British, and the United States all kind of simultaneously, which makes it even more amazing to the story. But, like, this pushback happened throughout the islands, throughout Jamaica, throughout South Carolina, throughout the South. Like, it was a consistent thing with the fighting back against enslavement, right, which it's only natural to think that this is what we were about. But that narrative is definitely being pushed out and needs to be stamped out.
It has to be stamped out.
If we intend to have our warriors moving forward, yes.
Yeah, it has to be stamped out. And just to even kind of further along those lines, because it also, for me, when I started learning about the rebellions, because, again, we understand that the 12 years of public school education are not going to teach you this. And, I don't even have the expectation, so I want to always make that clear when I say this. But when I did start learning about them on my own, it personally reminded me of how much I owe and helped me understand what was done so that that's not still my experience. Like, you know, now that we look at 1860, quote unquote, 65 is so long ago, if you will, you know, America is really a young country, if you will. But since we look at it in that context as Americans, if you will, then we literally lose sight of the actual role that was played there. I've had plenty of authors that have written the real history to even, things that were done within the black abolitionist movement to really, in a sense, speed up the Civil War happening or whatever. Because there's even, I would even throw this out, even in the, if you will, even within the conscious community, there's this concept that the Civil War wasn't fought over our enslavement. That is absolutely false. And if you learn the history of the involvement of our own people in being catalyst to the Civil War happening, you would lose saying such a silly thing. Because, again, 100 years prior to 1865, people were getting together that looked like us, wanting that to happen sooner than it, even sooner than it actually happened, and played a huge role on just even the quote-unquote enslavement period ending. And I think, matter of fact, Ulysses S. Grant and Robert E. Lee, obviously we learn about that in the Civil War, but Robert E. Lee is quoted after the Civil War, after losing the Civil War, quoted years later saying that he never seen people play such a small role in their own freedom. That's something that he thought after having fought in the Civil War, and if you will, in the Civil War, not being privy to the actual black soldiers, one that fought, but even more importantly, all of the black abolitionists, specifically the black abolitionists. Like, we learn the history as if, in a sense, the white abolitionists were the saviors, if you will, setting up the Underground Railroad. But no, the black abolitionists were pressuring the white abolitionists to actually do more because they were trying to take such a peaceful approach in the country, and that absolutely was not going to work. If the white abolitionists would have had their way, the Civil War probably wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the black abolitionists saying this is the only way this shit ends. And that's, again, history that you're typically not going to learn. I know, I shouldn't say typically, I learned some of this at college level. You know, we always talk about the idea of, you know, what you're not going to learn as a 12-year, and when it comes to black history, you might get that elective in college as an African-American studies unless you decide to go into the major. And so that's the reality of not teaching our history, because people don't understand history is a political tool. And so that's why it is imperative that we come and learn these stories and pass them along, because we owe a big price. Akua, any thoughts? I know I'm kind of jumping on a little soapbox here, but any thoughts on anything that you're hearing or anything you want to bring to the table?
Yeah, definitely. And then I just also want to throw out there real quick, my website is akuarights.com. So if you're interested in any of the works that I've done, you can find them there. So one, when I heard a quote that became popular a few years ago, I am not my ancestors,
I remember that.
Oh my God, I knew we was in trouble. I knew we were in trouble. To say like, okay, because I'm going to do this, that, and the third means you have no idea what they actually did. And if we know anything, we know history repeats itself. So a lot of these positions and battles we find ourselves in, our ancestors were also in, and they actually did quite a bit more than we're doing today. We're even more vocal about it. So I was outraged to see that become a trend. Absolutely. But it's because some of the things that you all mentioned just a minute ago about maybe the violence that was involved in that historical piece. So the parents or teachers don't teach it to the children, so they can't relate to it. They don't know it ever existed. They don't know what happened because they're sheltered from it. They're in a bubble. They only learn about the people that America says is okay to learn about, the Nobel Peace Prize winners, the marchers with swollen feet, these individuals. So I love that you mentioned the AT Revolution because, again, it was all-inclusive. And to know that they even extended citizenship to us, that touched me personally. When I researched that piece, it was like, wait a second. So not only did they realize the situation they were in, which also had to look over tribalism, because many of the Africans there were not necessarily, of course, from the same tribe, and they had different spiritual systems, but they found enough similarity to do ritual and to overturn it and take over, right? So we have some of the same things here where some people practice Islam, some are Israelites, some are Christian, some are African spiritualists, and we think that we all got to do the same thing so that we can achieve a higher level of independence, and it's absolutely not so. So, that's... the only piece I wanted to add in on that, like I love that you mentioned the AT Revolution. It's an amazing Pan-African piece. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's just...
No. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. I mean, you got me fired up, right? but always like you always hear that. Yeah, I'm always fired up. But you always hear that term like, we're not a monolith, Freddie. We're not a monolith. Yeah, but we monolithically getting our ass kicked all over the globe, right? If you can't come together under that, like, what are we doing? So we got to wake up, and I love that you pointed to AT. Get me right, just know my language. But I think that that's a really important revolution, because not only did they offer a citizenship, you notice that they cut off travel from them coming here, right? They put the ban on the immigration because they didn't want them spreading that revolutionary nature into the Africans in America at that time. But one thing that I did, and I know that you touched on the tribalism and them not all having the same belief system or whatnot, but finding a way to come together. And I love to highlight the point that black women specifically are behind the Haitian Revolution. We always talk about the men of that revolution, but we don't give credit to the women that were involved, and there were some prominent figures. And one, everybody fought, right? It wasn't like, you just sit on the sideline. Like, nah, like, these people could be in the future of the freedom, the future of their descendants, so much so they would rush the cannon and stick their arms in the cannon so that when they fired, like, it would be a useless weapon moving forward, knowing that they were willing to sacrifice their body. But I wanted to bring up specifically, I believe her name is Abariah Toya.
Let me do this, Brother Freddie, if you will. We're at the top of the hour. So I'll gladly have you bring her name up again as one of our unsung heroes after this break, if you will. For anybody out there listening, 646-787-1691, definitely call in. Let me go through our trivia question before we go to break real quick. Again, who was the first Black American to serve as a member of the board of directors of a Fortune 500 corporation? Fred, I'll let you answer this one. We got A, Kenneth Chenault; B, Ursula Burns; C, Vernon Jordan; D, Arnold Donald. Brother Freddie, I'm making
this one. Yeah, I got to be honest. I don't know this one off the top of my head, but I'm going to go with Vernon Jordan.
Vernon Jordan is the correct answer. All right, y'all. We'll have some more trivia when we come back from break. You're listening to the Mr. Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
What is Black love? Find out as the Arts and Culture Show at Mental Dialogue presents the True Love Experience, February the 14th, 6:30 p.m. at the Bookstore Gallery, Atlanta's Black-owned cannabis bar and dispensary, as we have an interactive night of games, poetry, and discussions about true love. Only $44 per couple. Includes a free wine tasting, limited seating for this exclusive event. As my man Sincere breaks down the 30 Love Laws, his book, and we have these open dialogues. You will walk away with a better understanding of the type of love it takes to build nations. Valentine's Day, can't beat it. If you have nothing to do, this is where you want to be. Again, exclusive event. Get tickets from myself, Montoya Smith, or my man Sincere. Contact us directly. Get your tickets before the seats are gone. February the 14th, 6:30 p.m. Bookstore Gallery, only $44 per couple. Can't beat it. All I ask is that you think. And no matter what the storm
may bring. True Seekers, please understand, Mental Dialogue is much more than just a talk show. Each and every Saturday, we communicate with you for two reasons, to dialogue and connect. On the dialogue side, we cater to you intellectual outcasts who feel you have no place for honest discourse on race, sex, culture, and African-American business. On the connect side, we've created a community where you can connect with experts specifically in finance, whether personal or business, and mental health, whether it's trauma or to optimize performance, along with all the other skill sets from other MD community members. Our mission was to create a virtual nationwide neighborhood where African Americans learn to trade ideas, goods, and services through social media, meetups, and this podcast. To become a neighbor of the Mental Dialogue Community Club, please visit us at mentaldialogue.com. We are better with you than we are without you. We can be neighbors even though we don't live next to each other. Hashtag raise the culture.
My grandma Ali Mae Knight was a G who once threw a rock at a white man in Bolton, Mississippi for calling her the N-word, causing her family to flee the Jim Crow South, moving to Jackson, Michigan. It was there that she met my grandfather, pictured here, James Knight. They eventually moved to Chicago because of his job. They would go on to have three daughters, Melody, Millie, and Monica. And as they grew older, my grandma went back to school to get her master's in social work. She then started working for a social service agency called HRDI. They focus on providing mental health services, healthcare access, and substance abuse treatment. This was of the utmost importance, especially in the 80s and 90s on the south side of Chicago during the war on drugs and crack era. By 2007, she'd become the president and CEO of HRDI. And soon after, she got an honorary doctorate from Kentucky State University.
Welcome back to the Mr. Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Sakua. This morning's discussion question, Black history, who are our unsung heroes? Before we go into that cut, Brother Freddie, I see you, a caller wants to get in as well. But Brother Freddie, you were about to break down another hero from the Haitian Revolution, if you will. So go ahead and do that, and we'll get to the caller and then go to talk about the cut.
Yeah, the Sister Abariah Toya is who I was leading into, and Victoria Monto is like another name that she goes by. You got to have to piece together like your history, but she was a Amino, right? The Hama Warriors, we kind of bring it to context. You saw that movie, The Woman King, and it was about the Dahomey people or the Dahomey tribe. But some of those warriors, like that, I hate that movie. We're not going to go into that just yet about the history, but some of the warriors were captured over in Angola and brought over during the Haitian Revolution, and she was one of those individuals, but she was actually a Dahomey warrior, and she trained Dessalines and the Haitian Revolution in their war tactics. So she is a military strategist behind the Haitian Revolution, and part of this story that never gets out and is never conversed, right, or put into the ether about with the woman involvement, particularly the military strategy that was involved in the winning of the revolution. So I think like that's a really important piece for our young female warriors out there that are enjoying. They need to know about these individuals so that they can aspire to do such if necessary.
I love it. Let's go to a caller. I got Brother Pianchi out of St. Louis live on the line. Thanks a lot, King, for calling in. Give us your 3 cents on this morning's discussion. Anything you want to add to the discussion, we absolutely would appreciate it. Thank you for being with us.
How you doing? Okay.
Yeah, doing well.
Yeah, doing well. You get married yet?
Nah, I ain't worked it out yet. We still trying to get there. But thank you for looking out for me, Brother Pianchi.
No, it's good for kids to study history and also other things in conjunction. I got a good quiz for you. Who was the first and probably the only black American to erect structure steel buildings like the ones that fell down in 9/11 in New York, his own company, bridges over waterways and rivers, and industrial plants?
So we got a real life superhero on the line, y'all. Brother Pianchi Nefakara. The brother Pianchi. Yeah, we got it. I got it already. It's Brother Pianchi Nefakara.
Oh man, damn! You messed up the whole thing.
I already got the air. I'm too slick for you, Brother Pianchi. I know you're a real life superhero. That's why you're the only. Well, I don't know if you're the only caller. You might be the second caller that got featured on the show because of your knowledge. So yeah, absolutely. We definitely highlight and have highlighted you several times for the work and the roles that you've played and helped others move into position. So absolutely, I love the fact that you calling in and highlighting yourself, because I was gonna. It's funny because on the cut that I just played, I was highlighting Brother Ernest Krim III, and he was talking about his own grandmother. So I wanted to challenge. We got another caller as well. But I wanted to challenge the callers to call in and tell us about their personal heroes of shoulders, who they stand on. And I know, just to highlight this, I know I'm kind of jumping in here on you, Brother Pianchi, but I know what you're doing with your grandson, sending him into engineering as well. So I know you're building that legacy, and it's always been something that's important to you, and you always give us advice on how to do that. Go ahead, brother. Sorry.
He's supervising the construction of brand new liquefied petroleum gas projects outside of Louisiana, right out of high school. Not a high school, right out of college. Right out of college. Yeah, but no, and you may mention about Patrice Lumumba. Lumumba was the first foreign president leader to be assassinated by the CIA, being the Dulles brother, who was Secretary of State. And the assassination, I think, was carried out by a man by the name of Frank Lucha out of Texas. So it's a lot of heroes that we have present day that goes unnoticed. I think that it would be a disservice if you don't look at what wonderful things that young African Americans and some older ones are doing present day, and they get no mentions.
And that's what we're trying to do today, is just highlight and help people hopefully hear some names that they can go easily research. That's the beauty of being in today's time, is that we can easily research it. And then my guest, I'm going to be highlighting your work here, obviously before the end of the show, as well as Freddie. We definitely want to let people know how they can get a hold of both of your resources. But thank you, Brother Pianchi, for the call.
Thank you very much. Talk to you later.
No, absolutely. No, thank you for that. We got another caller, so let me jump in on this caller as well. Area code 404, last 3227. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion.
Hi, it's Chingwei.
Hey, Chingwei, how you doing, Queen? What you got for us? You got an unsung hero for us?
I do. Her name is Callie House, C-A-L-L-I-E, House as in home house.
Got you.
And one of the things I love about Callie House is she was an ex-slave who started the ex-slave, and she was demanding reparations back in I'm going to read from the back of the book that I read by Francis Berry, which
is take your time.
Callie House's story. And it says, a widowed Nashville washerwoman and mother of five, House went on to fight for African-American pensions based on those offered to Union soldiers, brilliantly targeting $68 million in taxes on seized rebel cotton and demanding it as repayment for centuries of unpaid labor. Now, here's the thing. She was harassed by the government, particularly the Postal Service, because when she would ask members to send in dues so that they could help with, it was a mutual aid society.
Gotcha.
And she was tirelessly campaigning for reparations. And so she's an unsung hero. And that was back in the late 1800s and early 1900s. So that's my unsung.
I love it. I love it. I've never heard of her, but that name will never leave me because I know you and I, we talked about this as well, but definitely a believer in reparations are absolutely due, and I did not know about a Callie House. So thank you for bringing her to the table. I'm personally going to research her because I love, you know, learning this type of information. But basically, she's at the forefront of what we're still demanding, if you will, for those that are like I tell people, if you are of an African descendant and don't think we need reparations, okay, but just be quiet. But are those of us that do and want to work on it, you know, leave us alone and you're going to take your check or whatever comes with it when that time comes. So definitely thank you for bringing her as an unsung hero. Freddie or Akua, any of y'all heard of Callie House? I never heard of her before, so I'm actually thankful to know.
No, I haven't.
Bringing her forward.
Yeah, no, I wasn't aware. I wrote the name down, jotted me a couple of notes, and I'm definitely in the reparations camp. So it's amazing to hear, you know, somebody 125 plus years ago was campaigning and fighting for something that we should still be fighting for today.
Yeah, it sounds like she was doing it pretty brilliantly, like say targeting the, you know what I mean, targeting those. So you know that money that was seized, that seems brilliant of an approach. Or whatever, and so definitely highlight anybody out there on that movement. Again, be like the caller, 646-787-1691. The cut you just heard was Ernest Krim III, brothers doing 29 days of Black History on his IG page. I think it's Mr. Krim III, if you're on IG. Go follow that brother, and he highlighted his own grandmother. Again, I am encouraging anyone that's, you know, I see another caller out there, if you're calling in, jump in and literally tell us about your local heroes. It doesn't even have to be anyone famous that's necessarily recorded in history, but anybody, you know, I just a quick story of my own. Let me see if this other caller is trying to jump in real quick. All right. No, we're good to go. All right, cool. All right. So real quick, I remember my grandfather who's 80 plus, I remember asking him about some of his history or whatever. And he had a muffler shop in my small town there for a lot of years. And when I was young, I didn't realize he worked a full-time job and had the muffler shop. But literally, every day he would drink a Coke. And he told me the reason he drank a Coke every day was because as a young man, he had went to this one location when he was a teenager, I think. And he went to buy a Coke, and he reaches into the back, then they had the freezers or whatever. He reaches in, and a white man grabs his arm and tells him he can't buy one because he's a black kid or whatever. And so when he got his own muffler shop and put his Coke machine in there. He literally drunk one every day because that was his memory or whatever. And that's a personal memory. But he also told me how when during the civil rights movement in the area, when they went to quote unquote integrate the public pool, they went and protested and went to the pool or whatever. After they protested, the next day they filled a pool up. This is back where I'm from in South Carolina. They filled a pool up with sand so that nobody could use it. I want to highlight this one thing, and we're going to go to break. So while the narrative we might say in 2024 was, oh, why did they want to go to their pool? No, these were public tax dollars. Our people were being taxed for it, and they could not use the pool. We wasn't trying to go swim with white people. We wanted equal protection. We paid taxes. We wanted representation. We should be able to use the pool that we're paying for anyway. Again, I hate the way we paint the narrative as though our people wanted to be next to white people. They didn't care anything about that. But don't take my tax dollars and I can't use it. Let's go to break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. Well, all I ask is that you think. Anybody who wants to get in, the number 646-787-1691. You do have to press 1 to let us know you want to speak.
Calling all married couples. Have you planned your Valentine's Day weekend getaway? If not, we recommend you reignite your passion in your marriage at the Oneness Experience Weekend, February the 16th through 18th, 2024. Brought to you by Enduring Love Ministries, hosts Roosevelt and Renita Quick, authors of The Power of Agreement and 30 Years of Marriage Experience, ask couples to reconnect, rekindle, and recommit to their marriages. Are you yearning for a deeper, more purposeful connection in your marriage? If so, the Oneness Experience is for you and your spouse. Taking place in the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, experience an anointed weekend with plenty of couples activities, marriage enrichment sessions, such as the strength of seduction, and ample quality time together. Again, the Oneness Experience Weekend takes place February the 16th through 18th. For registration details, please visit Enduring Love Ministries International at elmintl.org. Again, that is elmintl.org. Tickets are going fast.
Yo, John Berry Meacham was a straight-up G who opened a school for black folks on a steamboat in the middle of the Mississippi River after Missouri banned the education of black folks, forcing him to close down the school he had on land because they realized that educated black folks were a threat to the system of slavery. How did he get it done? Well, let me explain. Meacham was born enslaved in Virginia in 1789. Because he was able to learn carpentry, he saved up enough money to buy his freedom at the age of 21. Around that same time, his wife, Mary Meacham, was forced to move to St. Louis with her enslaver. He bought her freedom too and subsequently moved there. While in St. Louis, he met a white ally named John Mason Peck, who was opening a school for Native Americans. Together, they opened the first African Baptist church. As school attendance increased, so did racial tension. So they banned black education, and Meacham took his supplies to the boat.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Akua. This morning's discussion question, Black History, who are our unsung heroes? Our special guest is Freddie Taylor from Urban Intellectuals. As you hear, one more cut from Ernest Krim III talking about Meacham, who basically had this black school and literally creatively moved it to the boat when they banned the school on land. Like, we really don't quite always understand the efforts that our people went through just to get this education. And so when we honor and if you will, we're going to call this Black History Month, if you will. But to your point earlier, Brother Freddie, it was Black History Year, of course, 365. Of course, we understand that. But in honoring Black History, when you don't know these stories and understand the efforts, because they banned the education. And we've heard that they kept black people from reading. Like, that's the kind of something people would generally hear. But when you hear the specific details, how are you not seeking education for the freedom that it gives? Because when you know and when you are aware, you will not allow yourself to be treated the same. And that's how far they went. And this brother actually took his school to the actual bold. Wanted to highlight this, Chinwe, if you're out there still listening. Brother Pianchi just sent me some information on your sister Kelly House. This is so dope, so I wanted to highlight this real quick. But actually, Brother Pianchi actually met the sister that, I guess, did the biography for Kelly House. They're actually searching for her grave site as part of digging up her history, if you will. And he highlighted that she was actually seeking pension for ex-Civil War veterans or whatever, because, again, we did fight in that war despite what a Robert E. Lee might like to put out publicly about our community, but we were absolutely in that war, you know, absolutely fighting for our own freedom, if you will. Again, I know I said a lot there, but I definitely wanted to highlight the fight for education, how it absolutely coincides with this discussion today and why we should understand and learn who our unsung heroes, because there are many that we don't know about and should know about. Freddie, any thoughts on what you're hearing? Because I know I said a lot, put a lot out there, but go ahead and jump in, King.
Yeah, no, I loved it all. My mind wandered to my father, and I just wanted to share a story that he told me. Because we got this dewy-eyed view of Northern America, right? Like, it was just this wonderful place.
Oh, well, I don't know if we got that view, but we just thought it was a lot different than the South.
Yeah.
I don't know if you got a wonderful view. I think you're going a little too far with that one.
I guess you got to challenge me on my words, right? I can throw that flower.
Hey, Malcolm X is always letting us know.
He always said,
they said south of the Mason-Dixon line. Michael Bay said south of the Canadian border.
We ain't got
that kind of view, but go ahead and tell your story, though, King.
Kind of view, yeah. Well, yeah, let me just tell it. So Dad was born in 1929, right? So he had me when he was older. He was when I was born. He's still alive today. He's 94 years old. We actually call him 94. He graduates every year. He gets a birthday. But that's my man. I love to hear his conversation because he's lived through all of these periods that we're talking about. And I hearken back to, like, the Civil Rights Movement, right, in the 60s. And if you remember, like, Northern white folks would go down and take part in, you know, the marches,
freedom
and
ride.
The activism, the Freedom Riders. Yeah, Freedom Riders. There we go. Thank you. And he worked at the post office, right? So in Michigan, I'm sorry, let me back that up. So he grew up in Detroit, Michigan. What up, though? Right? And all
what up,
that,
though?
But,
absolutely.
Absolutely, the D represent. Right, but so he worked at the post office there. Of course, he was, you know, one of the few black folks there. So you would be in the lunchroom or you'd be around and you would hear their reactions to different things. And the little some of the white women that would go down that would end up murdered or killed, right, for participating in these freedom rides. The conversation in the North wasn't, oh, this is a tragedy. The conversation was, well, they shouldn't be down there causing trouble anyway. So he always, I love to get the ear of the elders,
right,
to, you know, what they heard or what they experienced during these moments. When King was assassinated, wasn't nobody mourning in the North? I ain't going to say nobody, but a big percentage of the Northerners weren't mourning; they were celebrating the death of this troublemaker. He wasn't causing no trouble; he wouldn't be dead, right? So now we see all the celebrations and Dr. King holidays and everything. Like, he was beloved; he was not beloved by this community. But the brother and even the white sisters put their lives on the line, and not to mention the countless black brothers and sisters as well, put their lives on the line for us to have these opportunities. So I like to caution us when we get to using these flowery language, right, about the North and the Democrats and our allegiance to them. It ain't what it seems like, right? It's not what it really is being pictured to be. So I definitely caution us. But I love to sit at the ankles of the elders and to hear their insights because they just have so much by being alive during those moments.
No, absolutely. Akua, if you will, Queen, I know you challenged people as you were promoting this show to, in a sense, speak about, if you will, you might be next to someone who's, in a sense, making history. You know, I would offer that Freddie Taylor, with all the work he's doing in education, educating our people, will be one of those people who will be remembered in the future. But if there's anybody you want to, you know, personally highlight from the past or even currently that you feel is you know, in a sense, doing the type of work that should be recognized as an unsung hero. Please bring them to the table, Queen. Again, I appreciate you promoting and asking people to even, you know, consider that. And, you know, that's why I want to talk about my grandfather, if you will. But go ahead, Queen.
Sure. There's quite a few people. I think my definition of what a hero is maybe more humble than not as grandiose as what others think. Because I think we overlook a lot of people based on just some personal preferences and what's going on in their personal life and, you know, things like that. Anyhow, I would say there's a sister who probably doesn't even know necessarily. I feel this way about her. If you're local to Atlanta, I feel like you've definitely heard of her at least. But her name is Taj. By day, she's a firefighter, a paramedic, but she's also like a spiritual leader. She's a priestess. She has a doula space. She's gone on missions to recover land that has been in her lineage. Like, she's always on a mission, and she absolutely handles business every single time. There's a lot of people I know, and everyone I know knows her. And these people are also handling business, and I look up too highly. So, as a matter of fact, she does know. She does know. I told her that. But, I think so. If you're on Instagram, her name is Beretta Sky King on there. But the sister's name is Taj, and she's really dope. I like her perspectives. Very honest, you know, in your face. So that's the one I would mention for sure.
No, I respect it. And I'm going to challenge you. I've been challenging you for years to get out to our live event. If you know, I don't know how close you are. You know what I'm saying? I don't know how close you are, but just based on what you just said, she would definitely be a value add to our community club where we, you know, just to highlight, we meet once a month at Urban. I'm just doing this to highlight Urban Grind, black-owned mm-hmm. coffee shop here in Midtown. But, yeah, if you would, you know, invite her out to our events, because we need y'all additional 3 cents. I always tell people we're better with you than we are without you. Send another caller out there as well. If you're trying to get in, caller, you do need to press 1. If you're just listening via the phone, no problem. But, yeah, we absolutely have to highlight, if you will, not just local, but like you said, not even – they ain't even such necessarily the definition of hero, if you will. Obviously, we use that in the title, if you will. But I remember years ago – speaking at a, in a sense, Black History program a lot of years ago within my own church or whatever, and I highlighted some, if you will, similar to what we're doing today, maybe some, in a sense, some famous people that at the time I kind of, famous people that I knew they mostly knew, but I challenged them in the middle of that conversation to say, there are stories inside this church right now that absolutely should be our stories, because what I've said for years, when I've always, you know, writers, we write, right? So, I just now put out my first book just a year ago, but I've been writing all my life. And I remember writing just a piece about the generation gap that was always highlighted when we were coming up, being younger. Obviously, in a sense, a lot of our parents were having us a lot younger, or, you know, and if you will, than maybe in the past, or just on our own, if you will. I called myself is the hip-hop generation, quote-unquote. We're the first, quote-unquote, fatherless generation. So as that generation gap seemed to increase, I always highlighted it was knowledge-based, and it was, in my opinion, partly because for my grandparents, my mother and them were, in a sense, kind of the first to integrate schools, if you will, and it was like, that generation was so excited about my mother and that generation being able to go to schools for a full 12 years because they didn't get to graduate and all that kind of stuff. They were so happy that the opportunity was there. They forgot to tell my parents the story for how they got there. It was like, just go do it. Just go do it. And so we didn't continue to supplement with our stories, and I feel like that loss of information actually created the generation gap. Again, this is something I thought about years ago in my 20s, right out of college, just wrote a piece about the generation gap comes because we're not sharing the local stories of understanding exactly what it took. Like even the Arkansas Nine, like exactly what they went through to integrate Little Rock, like to know the actual details, changes how you act in school. Like when I talked about at the beginning of the show, how immigrants come and see this opportunity, they come here on a mission because they're familiar with their history. I remember doing a show years ago out of this guy's house, and we did I forgot what the show specifically was about, but I remember one of the brothers, I think he might have been from Nigeria or maybe Ghana, but he said when he first got here, he was at the time shocked how little African Americans knew of their, like, they're just their own personal history or whatever, which actually when I talked to him, it made sense because around the world, cultures pass down their history. That's understood when your culture has been kept intact. But unfortunately, based on our American experience, that was in a sense cut off, and so we have lost the understanding of why cultures even pass down their history. So since we don't understand the why, and in public school system, it just seems to be, I got to take a test to get a grade on this test. I just remember some dates and remember some names. And so since that's how we learn it in the public school system, we're not connected to why history is a political tool and used so importantly. So let me go to this next break, and we'll get into that concept. I want to definitely hear y'all's thoughts on understanding how history and why history is used the way that it is. We'll be right back listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
And so what you have now is you have folks who are scared to death of how America is changing. By 2043, America's going to be a minority of whites, majority of people of color. And so folks are freaking out. They're freaking out because this is about power. It's about money. And so what you've always had is, if you go back to the Black Freedom Movement, 1955 to 1968, King's assassination, affirmative action, when Nixon comes into the White House, Arthur Fletcher, they put that in place. Remember, LBJ gave a speech on that at Howard University before King was killed. And so it was, affirmative action. Well, we also know the greatest beneficiary of affirmative action has been white women. So they've always, qualified. So they never use the qualifier qualified when speaking of somebody white. They assume they're qualified. But when it's anybody black or Latino or Asian, Native American or woman, are they qualified? Now, you and I have been in the media business, and you and I know some white folks who have been hired, and we're sitting here like,
yeah.
How the hell they got the job? How did they get the job? And see, they don't speak on that, but they want to cast doubt. So when we were in college, you must have got in because of affirmative action. Oh, I'm sorry, whole bunch of y'all got into school because your mama was white and your daddy was white, and we weren't allowed to even go to these schools. But see, that's not how they want to view it. So what you now have is a well-funded, well-orchestrated attack on all of this. Christopher Rufo, a conservative who led the fight against critical race theory. This is literally what he tweeted, Stephen. Okay. This is what he said. The goal is to have the public read something crazy in the newspaper and immediately think critical race theory. We have decodified the term and will recodify it to annex the entire range of cultural constructions that are unpopular with Americans. Now, that was his initial tweet. He later said that we have successfully frozen their brand, critical race theory, into the public conversation and are steadily driving up negative perceptions. We will eventually turn it toxic as we put all of the various cultural insanities under that brand category. So they went from critical race theory, remember that was in 2021,
right,
to drive the 2022 midterms. Now it's DEI. But it's all under the same banner because they want to brand anything that has been helpful for African Americans and others to succeed in this society as race-based, not qualified, DEI, CRT, because it's all designed to scare white people because they are moving towards becoming a minority in this country.
And
welcome back to the Mr. Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, along with special guest co-host Akua this morning's discussion question, Black History, who are our unsung heroes? A special guest is Freddie Taylor from Urban Intellectuals, and I wanted to highlight the CRT, critical race theory concept, as Roland Martin was on the Stephen A. Smith show, and I wanted to give the full breakdown because, again, most people don't understand history. History is actually used as a political tool, and I wanted to challenge our community to, one, gather that awareness, that understanding, so that we are effectively learning our story and using it just as effective as, if you will, of just what you just heard there. So Martin breaks down specifically how critical race theory, we've done shows on this, has been misnomered, as I would like to say, because the critical race theory specifically is a graduate level concept that has never been taught in public schools, but that's how it's being used. And for me, I'm not on either side. I'm an independent, but I am highlighting the reality of how, when we see these concepts of, quote unquote, we call it whitewashing history, there's a power approach attached to it, because here's the reality of how history is used within cultures and within countries as a political tool. And this is necessary. And so, again, this is something I challenge our community to learn, too. The reality is, even when we highlight, we'll say, generally speaking, says, oh, they're not going to teach us about the horrors of what happened specifically in this country. The reality is, no groups, even within your family, when you teach your history within your family, you highlight those who will esteem the next generation. You highlight the best that you have. That is a normal way history is told. We always highlight this concept of the winners write history. That is absolutely true. To give a prime example of me even getting exposed to that concept, I remember years ago, I went to a Black history program, and they had a South African white guy there or whatever talking about the history. And he asked us in the audience, he goes, you know, you as Americans, y'all learned a lot about the American Revolution, correct? And we all said, yes, we had learned that history. He goes, well, I went to school in South Africa, and we had one sentence about the American Revolution. It said in 1776, I might be wrong on the year, but the U.S. of America earned its freedom from Great Britain. It was a one-liner, because Britain controls South Africa, so in telling their story, they're not going to tell their bad history. I'm highlighting this because if we understand what's happening with the CRT stuff and how it's being used, then I'm challenging our community to be aware and not just stop at see what they're doing. Well, once I know what they're doing, then it becomes imperative that we equip our children with the information they need so that they can, in a sense, fight for power. You can't fight for power if you don't understand how to use history as a political tool. I know I said a lot there. We got a caller that wants to jump in. Let me talk to both of our guests before we get to you, caller. Freddie, any thoughts about where I'm going? Because we just look at history as I had to take a test and I'm tired of learning it. Not understanding it's always been used as a political tool for all cultures and all countries. Your thoughts, King?
Yeah, I mean, I got a lot of thoughts, but I think you're onto something, but I really don't get caught up in the CRT movement or the pushback and fight against it, because I never expected America to properly teach our history to our children anyway. We inside of like our community, we talk about what do you look for when you look at a picture, right? So imagine a picture, whatever the picture is, but you're in the picture somewhere. There's a group picture. You know you're in there. What are you looking for? The first thing that you look for is this natural. All humans look for themselves in the picture first. And we look at the landscape of history the same way. And we look at our educational system the same way. You're looking for yourself to be represented. So white European people are doing what white European people should do. They're creating education and history that inspires little Timmy and little Joseph, because when they look into this lens, they see themselves, they feel validated, they feel confident, they know that the great things that they've done in the past, and they know what they can, they believe what they can do in the future. So we challenge our people, our community, to do this for your own children. This is, they're not going to do it for you, right? It's our responsibility. The first teachers are in the home. And if you want them to have a clear view of history and understanding of what's transpired on this planet, as Dr. Clark always says, I love Dr. Clark. I just get excited when you brought him up. But he talks about never discussing the situation until you understand how it came to be. And a lot of times we just get to run in our mouths and not knowing the background of how things came to be. So I think we have to pivot internally and start to teach this history and culture inside of ourselves to not only paint the beautiful picture of the world and history and the contributions of humanity that Black and African people have made, but teach it to our children and our children's children so that they know the current state of the world and they know where they have to go in the future.
Right. I just find it extremely necessary, and I just brought the CRT part to the conversation to say, look, this is how it's being used. We need to understand it on that level for ourselves. So we're really saying the same thing. It's just if you just think of it as I got to pass a test, you're missing the whole boat on how history is used as a political tool. That's all I'm thinking I'm throwing out. Akua, any thoughts on that? Matter of fact, go ahead, Akua. Go ahead. Any thoughts on that, Queen? We're going to go to the caller after this.
Yeah, I'll just add on really quick. First of all, I feel absolutely everything the brother said he just said, and he said some of what I was going to say. So as he mentioned, and Malcolm X even said, the mother is the first teacher of the child. The message she gives that child, the child gives the world, right? We have to stop thinking that our enemies and or strangers are going to have our best interests at heart and want for our children what we want for them, right? Where in history have they ever displayed that, and why would it be to their benefit? It would be to their detriment, right? So with that, I don't know of many Chinese-centered educational spaces, Filipino, Spanish, because it's not necessary. They live their culture, and they teach their children their history. So you don't see them coming to school meetings saying, hey, you're not teaching our history and our children are here. They're going to teach their children that. They understand that that's their responsibility and that's to their benefit. But I have seen even in African-centered institutions that I've worked in where the parent put the entire bulk of making that children African-centered on the teachers. But the child can come home and end up more educated on African matters than the parents do, because they're like, that's what I pay you for. That I want them to go there so they can say this rhetoric. They can, name the different countries in Africa. They can name, different historical figures and scholars, and they feel proud, but they don't know how to actually function and contribute to a community from an African-centered base. So it has to start, as the brother Freddie said, at home and for intentional reasons, like looking at your child to see what you think their calling is, how they can fit in. One moment, baby. I understand. One moment. Okay. She's upstairs. So that is absolutely something I agree with, that you don't need to look at these schools. In fact, I think it could be for our benefit that they stop teaching some of our history, because we know it's full of misinformation in the first place. So our children have a rose-tinted idea on some of the things that our ancestors went through. Why? Because the enemy taught them that. This has to be curriculum that's approved by a board of people who don't have our interests at heart. And our boys, they have misdirected emotions because everyone's afraid to teach them of the soldiers and the warriors that their ancestors are connected to, the business they handled. We want to focus on making them know that they are intellectuals, which is absolutely important. It goes hand to hand with being a good warrior, but people are afraid to teach them how to be a good warrior. But a part of that strategy is for them knowing when to implement violence, when to take it to a certain level. Because we automatically think if I teach my son how to be a warrior, he's going to use it on his own people, because that's all we're showing on TV. I'm going to show him how to identify an enemy as well. That's a part of history. Uh-huh. So we are elated to teach little girls and women about female warriors. Women have never been lacking in showing up. We're the first ones out there. If you touch one of our sons, touch one of our sons, touch our husband. We are out there. We are ready.
people are behind us because we can't even control the audacity that's coming through us of we're going to get some justice one way or another. But people are afraid to teach boys that men have shown up in that same manner. The Babas have shown up in that same manner, ready for action. So now it's to the point, when I saw that steamboat situation, I literally cried because I was like, that's who you are, black man. You do stand up for each other and yourself. That's absolutely right. And then I was like, man, this is exciting, but it's also sad that I was moved to tears because I don't see that on a regular.
Yeah, I would do another 2-hour show on that. I think it does happen on a regular. I think we just misunderstand what we're looking at. But I'm definitely not going to change the concept of the show. 571, last 3237. I think we support each other way more than we realize via, you know, again, partly via relying on the media. So I definitely would, you know, in a sense, just throw that out. But 6237, we'll get to you after the break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
What is black love? Find out as the Arts and Culture Show at Mental Dialogue presents the True Love Experience, February the 14th, 6:30 p.m. at the Bookstore Gallery, Atlanta's black-owned cannabis bar and dispensary, as we have an interactive night of games, poetry, and discussions about true love. Only $44 per couple. Includes a free wine tasting, limited seating for this exclusive event. As my man Sincere breaks down the 30 love laws, his book, and we have these open dialogues. You will walk away with a better understanding of the type of love it takes to build nations. Valentine's Day, can't beat it. If you have nothing to do, this is where you want to be. Again, exclusive event, get tickets from myself, Montoya Smith, or my man Sincere. Contact us directly. Get your tickets before seats are gone. February the 14th, 6:30 p.m. Bookstore Gallery. Only $44 per couple. Can't beat it. All I ask is that you think.
And no matter what the storm may bring.
The Mental Dialogue Book Exchange Coffee and Wine Club is black. Partner with Privy and Stonecrest. Join us, all book lovers. Come share your book with others. You're not exchanging and giving it away. You're just sharing it with others so you can discuss your favorite parts inside of the book. This is a smart new event. Come out, drink coffee, drink wine. All I ask is that you think.
A couple of events coming up in addition to our regular Mental Dialogue Live experience every third Friday, as I mentioned earlier, at Urban Grind, which is February the 16th, where we also have the Mental Dialogue Book Exchange Coffee and Wine Club with Privy, as you just heard, on February the 10th, 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday. Bring your favorite book. You're not giving your book away. It's like speed dating with books. So you come out, tell people why you brought your book, and you're going to link up with at least three others, and we'll have a featured book in the discussion, and we'll have coffee from Dope Coffee wine and snacks as well. So that's a donation to enter event. And then February the 14th, Mental Dialogue and the Arts and Culture Show are linking up to put on the True Love Experience over at Bookstore Gallery. Contact me directly. Limited tickets, $44 a couple. Can't beat it. It's going to be an amazing night where intellect, healing, and love all meets. So definitely wanted to highlight those events. This morning's discussion question, black history, who are our unsung heroes? Got a caller that wants to jump in on this, 571, last 3237. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion.
Hey, Montoya, this is Emil Bryant calling you from North Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C.
Hey, what's up, King? What you got for us? Thanks for calling in.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Love the show. Love what you're doing. And I was empowered by my grandparents, so I'm gonna sing their praise, and then I'm gonna connect it to the political education you just talked about.
Yeah.
Benjamin and Mary Rose Dean fled the very dangerous and racist Birmingham, Alabama, during World War II, to find a new life in Portland, Oregon. So they went from one of the most racist places in the country to a place that was one of the most racist places in the country, and thought that was better than Alabama. Built a life that today their business, Dean's Beauty Salon and Barbershop in Portland, Oregon, is still vibrant and run by the third generation owner, Kimberly Brown.
I love it.
Those two grandparents also educated their eldest son to a master's degree at a private university in Portland, Oregon, and their third child to a master's degree from the University of Portland. Their second child, my auntie, ran the shop until she retired, and my mother worked for the same company for 35 years. So as heroes, those two set in motion a stage, a lifestyle that is hard to emulate. All of us grandchildren all have or do own our own home. Most of us are college educated, and those of us who are not college educated have our own business. So it goes from them, and I'm going to lionize these two, because when they fled during the Great Escape, it was not a great migration. Migrations are voluntary. The Great Escape during World War II and post-war years was them fleeing state-sanctioned terrorism. And the reason why I can connect it is because we don't even have the words in our normal lexicon to talk about how my grandparents and others like them fled state-sanctioned terrorism. We don't use any of those words to describe that period in time. And that's what it was. They were terrorized by people that either were authorized by the state or ignored by the state when they were doing those crimes. So we can have these discussions, but we have to start by understanding that our entire concept of what people did during those years and before and since is shaped by how we view history. I don't look at history any other way. My grandparents, on my father's side, left Mississippi right after Emmett Till. They were fleeing state-sanctioned terrorism, too, and they went to Portland, Oregon as well. So you have people who are describing our movement from the Deep South to parts north and west as a migration, as though we were not fleeing state-sanctioned terrorism. And we need to have these discussions much more robustly. So I appreciate you, Montoya, for being so clear that we need to have these discussions, and we need to ask these really hard questions. Our grandparents went through traumatic things growing up. My grandfather, Mr. Dean, was born in 1910. So he, as a boy, experienced the Red Summer of 1919.
Oh, wow.
That is trauma. He was in Birmingham, Alabama, the heart of the Red Summer, and he was traumatized. He had to hear his uncles. He had to hear his uncles, his father's friends, and his father all deal with what was happening to their friends who came back from the war. And he heard that. There was no cable TV. There were no headphones. There was no internet. So he was in the next room, and perhaps the door was closed, but he still heard it. He still saw with his own eyes men and women coming in and out of his home, in and out of that church. And that trauma does not easily translate to stories that people want to share. We have to acknowledge that it's hard for those stories to transmit without some form of therapy or some form of help that allows the people who experience those traumatic events to go back to those times and share those stories and not have to relive them from the pain of the first time they experienced them. We don't give enough credit to those people who have the ability to weather the PTSD that many of our people face that was not diagnosed and come through and be able to just stay sane enough to raise a healthy family, much less asking them to go back to those memories and say to us, hey, brother, hey, young man, hey, son, hey, daughter, let me tell you how I ended up here. It's too traumatic, and I know a whole lot of other people whose parents did something wrong. They hit a white man. They stole something because they were being wrongly accused of something, or they did something that they weren't supposed to do, and they had to go up north or go out west to flee for their safety. Perhaps they were wrong. Perhaps they were right morally, but they still had to flee. So when we talk about this history, let's put it in its proper role and context, which is, to me, anything we can learn about our elder generations and our ancestors that we can celebrate, even the fact that they had the wherewithal to leave, or if they stayed, they had the wherewithal to stay and still survive, or that they were able to raise children healthy enough to have these conversations now where we say, oh, man, I wish I knew more. That is a win in and of itself, and our political education needs to acknowledge that and then do whatever we can to uncover the truth as far back as we can go, even if our ancestors didn't tell us those stories. With that,
man,
I'll say peace, and thank you for this great show.
Nah, thank you, man. You said so much. I literally could do 30 more minutes off of what you just said, so thank you for that amazing call, Emil. I'm going to try to sneak in one of the callers. You can keep it quick. 404-last-3745. You only got about 5 minutes left, so if you can get it in quick, I'll let you sneak it in.
Hey, greetings, Montoya. This is Shay. Of course, I'm in Atlanta. Just wanted to shout out to you and the guests. This is a really, really important show. I just want to remind all the parents out there how important it is to bathe your children in these conversations and make sure that you make a mark on their life from a standpoint of liberation and resistance, because that naturally is in our DNA. So thank you again for the show.
No, absolutely. You really hit the nail on the head with that comment, Queen. So definitely appreciate that. And they, like, even the couple years ago, the George Floyd, like, it's like our kids don't even know why resistance is in their DNA. There's a real lived history to why it's in the DNA. Our ancestors, we can't, like Akua said earlier in the show, I'm not my ancestors. That is a abhorrent comment when you listen to what Emil just broke down. I wrote years ago, when we understand to even equate those who were rebellious with those who survive and understand that those are absolutely equals, then we would truly honor our ancestors and stop making mistakes to say things are still the same. Our trauma makes us say that. I remember just highlighting something very briefly, and I'll get back to both of you. Real brief, when Emil talks about that lynching period, we were having a conversation about this in the barbershop at Urban Grind, and I was highlighting, I was like, although we see these situations via the internet, and all our therapists recommend that you do not watch these police lynchings, if you will, via the internet. Like, don't watch them, because it's gonna in a sense re-traumatize. Stop watching them, if you will. But I was highlighting that as much as we seem like it's on the internet more, I said just like Emil just talked about, I says our ancestors 100 years ago would have been in this room. There's like 30 of us in there, and I was like, we wouldn't have just saw it on a video with somebody we don't actually know. We would all in this room know somebody that actually had been lynched. Like, we're not putting in context how bad the lynching period was for 25 years in this country, and you would know someone, not someone you just see on the internet. Just to highlight, things are not the same. We owe our ancestors. Brother Freddie, if you will, jump in. We only got 2.5 minutes before we go, so if you will, give a quick closing thought, make it real quick, get out your public information for how people can follow you. I know y'all got this upcoming event on February the 6th, so maybe highlight that, and I want to leave a little time for Akua to highlight her books, because she has books particularly for children and getting them started early. Thank you both for an amazing show. Go ahead, Brother Freddie.
Yeah, well, thank you again for having me. I'll try to be brief as I can be. I've been to the slave dungeons in West Africa. I've seen for myself the horrors that they had to face, our ancestors that survived, not only that period, but the Middle Passage. And then you just think about the centuries of oppression and trauma built on top of that. I've been fortunate enough to trace my lineage back through my matriarchal clan to Sierra Leone. My wife and I, we're actually from the same tribe, the Mende people. We have our dual citizenship there in Sierra Leone, but the history,
nice.
I've been there. I've been on Moss Island. I stand there when a great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother unfortunately boarded a ship from Bunk Island and then shipped to South Carolina. And I just know that blood, that DNA, that it runs through me through this day, through my family, through our lineage and our people, and that same energy of survival.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. If you can, brother, can you get to the public information so I can get a cool up before
It all runs through us, and I just want to continue that legacy, and that's what we do at Urban Intellectuals. You can go to urbanintellectuals.com and catch up on everything that we're doing to Black History Month.
I love it. Brother Queen, thank you so much, Brother Queen, if you will. Give them your public information so that they can get those books from you.
Absolutely. So my website is www.akuawrites.com. My Instagram is the same, akuawrites.com. And from there, I can plug you into anything that I'm doing. Thank you so much for having me again. I absolutely love this episode, and I have some studying to do based on some of the things that I heard mentioned today, too. So I'm thankful for that.
No, absolutely. MentorDialogue.com. Dialogue and connect is what we do best. So go find out how to be a part of our community club. If you're outside of Atlanta, consider joining at the gold level. If you're inside of Atlanta, join as a platinum or black level member and enjoy some of our exclusive stuff. We're going to end the show with a poem by Sabrine Jolly. If you're online, you will not hear this. This will be for the replay and for anybody listening via the phone line. All I ask is that you think.
Question. Why is there more negative than positive images of blacks in the media? Answer. Black exploitation pays more. Look at Drake. Look at Kate. Look at how the conversation changed when they around their friends versus when they rapping on a tape. I'm this even when I don't feel like it. I can't hang my black up like a coat and go and master calls. I can't run from my tone. My dialect sounds like neck bone juice running over, soaking my cornbread jargon. This breathing smells of pot liquor and melding pots. This is my land. I built it because my back is strong, strong enough to take the pain, inflict it again and again. What do they call me? That nigga, that sister, that brother, that queen, that king, creator, destroyer, that negro, killer, poverty stricken, only good enough to exploit, but never good enough to owe. Black, dispatched by the spirit to send this missive. The cognitively dissonant might dismiss this, but I'm on a mission, much like the running of shackled feet, escaping to give us free, the clasping of hands praying to give us free, or the bending of knee kissing the earth in submission, begging to give us free. I was told to tell y'all not to ask for shit no more, nor point the finger looking for an excuse, because the solution requires work and none of us want to be the laborers anymore. We's tied up and conditioned like kinks, reaching for handouts. But isn't it ours, this land, this struggle turned hip-hop, this morning turned bebop? Ain't it ours, everything from that ass on Kim K's back, them lips we talk smack with? But it is ours, taken. So why are we asking? I'm tired, ain't you? Or is it trending? Another thing to get us out the house and in the field. Don't epigenetics work either way? Don't exhaustion pass down like depression? Don't weary pass down like trauma? Don't fatigue pass down like bondage? Or have we forgotten who we're dealing with? This isn't new. It's easier to find the problem than create the solution. We're like mutants of God. No wonder everyone wants to quote us, know us. We're evolution of the weekend. Revolutions of the being, the solutions for the complainers, distribution, the real to the fakers. We're like Newton, but we stay in motion regardless. I got a new ton of issues, but I'm not complaining. I'm a messenger. Our necks have been noosed for quite some time. Now I'm no longer asking for permission to breathe or telling them I can't. My affirmation sounds like promise and ownership. My affirmation sounds like peace and self-governing. My affirmation sounds like love and keeping what's mine, because I'm black, built like that. My skin is black. My arms are long. My hair is woolly, my back is strong, strong enough to take the pain and fix it again and again. I'm breathing again and again. I'm living again and again. We're fighting again and again. Ain't you tired of suffering again and again? Stop complaining and take. Ain't you stronger than that? Take. That's like building a home for you and your family just for someone to come in and take, while you and your family sit homeless while they take. We're all too familiar with rehearsing the issue. Our set, our saw, and Heru turn Yesu somewhere over there with the council in them, and Nasir made me a believer, erased knowledge of self and infiltrated the minds with the master semen. Now we all fucked. Traded divine spirit for true religion. Traded the household for survival. Made our brother our rival. Made the enemy the idol. I am all too familiar with the problem. Be the commodity, till the land, bring forth vegetation and feed the child. Bear your baby, told we're hypo-human.
We are. Who knew the deep, the below, the barrel could teach you things the super couldn't? Take your child, feed mine, fuck it, you don't need it. You don't feel, your emotions aren't real. You're more like AI. Hey, I'm tired of talking about this shit. Time for solutions. Time to knock medulla so their heads are swooping anytime they touch us. Time to take advantage of the promise in this promised land, cause there is promise here. If only we stop complaining, asking for permission, and just take what's ours. Ain't we royalty? Give us free. Let us be everything we are, or we'll take it.
Georgia United Credit Union has raced that tower above the rest. Check out our competitive rates with guaranteed returns and watch your savings grow. We also have great reward checking and savings products that earn interest. It's easy to apply. And by joining Georgia United, you help give back to your local communities. Visit gucu.org/savings to get started. Insured by NCUA.
When you download the Kroger app, you have easy access to savings every day. Get the most out of weekly sales and receive personalized coupons to save on your favorite items, all while earning one fuel point for every dollar spent. Kroger makes it easy to save while you shop, whether it's in-store or online, so you get the most value out of every trip, every time. Download the Kroger app now to save big on your next purchase. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Must have a digital account to redeem offers. Restrictions may apply. See site for details.